So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to Rivulube!
Suplex right on top of him!
He's on him!
One! We got two! That's it!
He got him! He got him! He got him!
No, he didn't!
The referee counted three! We've got a new world champion!
No, we don't either!
I told it, McMahon! I told you! I told the world that the Giant would win it!
No, sir! That can't be! What is going on in the ring? Wait a minute. Is that Dave Hebner? Or is that Dave Hebner?
How can there be two Dave Hebners?
Look at these guys.
Wait a minute.
They look just alike. They look just alike.
The guy on the right's Hebner, isn't it?
The guy on the left is Hebner.
Wait, though. The guy on the right is.
Wait a minute. The Hulkster's coming over to figure out which... The official referee assigned was a man by the name of Dave Hebner. I can't believe we're looking at two Dave Hebners. What's going on here?
There's two Come Dave Hebners.
What's going on? The Hulkster's trying to find out who the real Dave Hebner is. Who's the real Dave Hebner? You tell me, Jesse Ventura, and what is going on here?
I think it's the one on the left. I think the Dave Hebner, I don't know who the imposter is. Look at these two.
But they're got, each one,
they look like identical twins.
Welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting coming at you yet again. What's happening, Wei? It's been a while.
Yeah, wow. It's almost been 12 hours.
Man, not quite. It feels more like we talked Monday night and now it's Wednesday morning.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
Let's keep that illusion alive.
Yeah.
That we're actually doing a live show that you have to download.
Mm-hmm. This is live at whatever time you happen to be listening to it.
You know, I was talking about this in Montreal with somebody of the idea of radio programs that you go out of your way to hear live. And I know everyone listens to live audio wrestling live, but other than that, is there any shows, Wei, that you go out of your way on the radio to hear? Because there is nothing I don't download.
I don't listen to the radio anymore, except for the law. Like, honestly, that's really the only thing. I don't.
I feel that, like, there's really gotta be, cause I see some radio stations, and it's like, they still haven't embraced, like, iTunes, or they put up an interview from a show, but not the whole show, and it boggles the mind to me, because I'm someone that, I wanna download a show. I don't want to download a clip from the show.
Yeah.
And well, I feel some stations, it's just like, man, it's been a rocky transition moving into the digital realm. And I don't think it has to be that difficult to fathom.
Isn't that because of ads and advertisers on their radio shows?
Well, I'm sure there is. But, I mean, there has to be a Wei to be like, hey, it's 2013 and we'll put your – like a lot of shows, they put ads within the downloadable show. So that you hear the ad.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole nother thing, isn't it? I mean, why wouldn't all TV channels put all of their programming on the internet? Why wouldn't WWE put all of their programming on the internet?
Well, it pretty much is, Wei. It's on Hulu now.
Yeah, which you have to pay for.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that you necessarily have to. Well, I mean, radio is, I don't know. I feel that there's a... If you're just putting stuff on the radio, to me, it's like, man, you're talking about tons of people that will never hear this stuff.
Well, keep in mind, too, though, that I think our generation, and especially people younger than us, they probably don't really listen to the radio at all. Especially, I mean, talk radio, I'd assume. maybe kids still listen to top 40 music and whatnot,
but they listen to podcasts. So I don't think it's the format that's the issue. It's the delivery method.
No. Well, what I'm saying, John, is that a lot of people older than us, don't know how to use computers, don't know how to use podcasts, and I'm assuming they still make up the majority of radio listeners.
Well, when I run my own radio station, I'm going to make everything available in full for downloadable users.
But I'd like to know your business plan. How do you plan on making money?
How to make money? I don't see this.
How do you plan on making money in radio? Period. Because I don't know how much there is right now.
Advertising.
Okay.
There's a subscription method that I think some could come to. In radio?
For podcasting, you mean?
Absolutely.
Okay. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know how much even money there is in that.
Do you think there was a lot of money in the WWF making a deal with NBC in 1988 for this main event show?
I think so. I mean, back in 88, this was really hot, wasn't it?
I had never watched this show, as evidenced by when I put the feedback up. I thought this was a Saturday night's main event. It was not. It was a spinoff, the main event. This was, I believe, the first time they did the main event. This was actually on a Friday night, Friday night, and this thing did the numbers it did. Incredible. It just, to me, it's people always wonder, man, why are those 80s stars still so hot and relevant today? Well, not relevant, but you know what I mean. Everyone's heard of, you know, if you go up and down the list here, I think most people, they've heard of the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. And I think a lot of it was this NBC deal and how many people watched this stuff. It was a very big part of people's culture.
Oh, absolutely. Look at this. It's only an hour-long show, but, I mean, look who was on it. I mean, Hogan, Andre, the rematch. And you have Savage, Honky Tonk Man, Million Dollar Man was on the show. Yeah, absolutely. These are all, I mean, at the time. I mean, even now, they're all legends.
How great was this that it was 45 minutes away?
Amazing. My favorite part.
I watched this in one sitting.
Yeah, me too.
They need more of these kind of shows. They need more of these
for us.
Yeah, like today, I mean. Like, I guess you have, you know, your 1 hour main event, but imagine if Raw was this short. I mean, obviously the economics of this would not work, but think how much bullshit you would cut out, because you would say, we have 45 minutes to get all our key stories across. You know what? We just don't have time for this Pancake Patterson skit. We've got to put our most important stuff into these 45 minutes. It's the essay rule, I remember, where they were like, anyone can write a 3,000-word essay. I want your essay to be 750 words, I was once told in grade 10, so that it eliminates all the crap that I don't need to read. And you only put your most important points into that essay. And it was a better essay for it.
Totally. I'm for that. I don't know. Would do you think people would complain if Raw suddenly turned back to 1 hour?
No, they would not.
I could see people complaining just because you know, they kind of, a lot of people, I'm sure, they base their nights, their evenings around watching Raw. And
who would complain about a show being too short?
A lot of people. Not you or I. Certainly, 3 hours is way too long. Okay, but I could see, you know, there are people that are much bigger wrestling fans than you or I. I mean, like, I guess less jaded than you or I. People who might travel, to multiple shows across a stretch. You know, like people who might have to, you know.
I think you're talking about an even smaller number of people that travel to shows and there wouldn't be enough wrestling on TV for that. Imagine an hour of Raw, an hour of SmackDown, and throw in your Saturday morning slam. That to me, that's more than my fix. Any other TV show, I get at most I watch an hour of a show a week. Walking Dead, anything, any show. Dallas is an hour a week. I wouldn't want Dallas to be 2 hours every week. And yeah, I love Dallas.
You're right. When you put in, you know, SmackDown and everything together, it does add up and it's fun. Well, okay, let's take this example then. I mean, remember when TNA used to be an hour? A lot of people were complaining that that was too short to get any of their storylines across.
They tried to cram in 10,000 storylines into an hour, and it was just exhausting. I don't think they realized they had a one-hour show.
So what would be the solution? Would you get rid of some of the roster then? Would you, I don't know, how would you make it work so that you're saying you would only profile maybe two or three storylines in the bulk of a 1 hour show? What do you do with the rest?
Well, there could be the strong argument that, you know, is R-Truth a key component of WWE right now? I would say no. So I'm not missing any of that. If I had an hour of Raw and an hour of SmackDown, I would keep the rosters separate at that point, and you have your two sides. And yes, I think you would have to drastically cut down on some of the talent.
Now, how would you build those talent? What if you wanted to push R-Truth in the future? How would you give this guy face time?
Listen, for years, I mean, let's go back to 1988. You know how much television they had every week? Forget SmackDown and Raw. They had superstars.
Yeah.
That was their way to roll out talent. Hulk Hogan did not work superstars unless it was like a big, big angle to be shot. And then they'd have a couple of Saturday night's main events a year. And they did they toured with three different touring house show crews.
Mm-hmm.
And did more than adequate. And
okay.
I mean, 45 minutes, still a lot of time to do a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how drastic of a cutback there needs to be, but there definitely needs to be a cutback on the amount of content. Right now,
there's no way it's happening. I mean, let's be honest, though. Those 3 hours of Raw are doing tremendously well. When you're averaging 5 million viewers over the course of three hours, I mean, I probably, if I was in that position, I would not want to make that call. But I look at the long term of just how much, like, post-WrestleMania this year will be very interesting. And I think we're feeling the effects of this. I've said this a million times now going into WrestleMania, is that with so much programming every week, it's hard to make any combinations. Are we excited that Ziggler and Langston are facing Daniel Bryan and Kane? I mean, I've just, outside of people that are coming back from as the part-timers, there doesn't feel like many special WrestleMania matches, because there's very little that feels special within the WWE. I have seen so much and so many combinations and so many of the same match over and over and over again over the last year that it's really tough for me to get excited that Wade Barrett might face The Miz at WrestleMania.
Totally. Totally. Absolutely. I'm completely.
That's where I feel the amount of hours really hurts them. It's on a week by week basis. Hey, the numbers are more than holding up. I am blown away by how good the 3 hour Raws are doing. This back in July, I thought that Raw was going to really take a big dip, and they have not. So in that case, I'm wrong, but I feel long term, it's going to really wear on people when it comes to making money on pay-per-view with special attractions, when you don't have a Lesnar coming back, or you don't have The Rock because he's doing a movie that year at Mania.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see.
All right, the main event. That was our preamble. February the 5th of 1988. Do you remember this Friday like it was yesterday, Way?
Not at all. I was three. I don't remember this at all. Do you?
No, I had never seen this show ever in my life, but had heard of this angle for years and years, but just never actually went to watch it. And I'm glad I had not seen this before this show. Market Square Arena, Indianapolis, Indiana. The setup to this, they were building this the greatest rematch in history. Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant, who had headlined WrestleMania 3 the prior year at the Pontiac Silverdome. And here we are almost a year later, and they were going to do the rematch on free television. And boy, were people excited.
Yeah, I mean,
title on the line. That alone was a big deal.
So tell me, how much was announced for WrestleMania at this point, a month ahead?
I've got to imagine, because obviously I was not watching at this time, I don't think anything would have been announced for WrestleMania at this point, because everything that was set up was the tournament, because the title was vacated coming out of this show, and that's what set up the tournament. So I don't think anything would have been announced for WrestleMania at this point.
Interesting.
So the announcers for this show were Vince McMahon and Jesse Ventura, with either they were able to manipulate the crowd noise very well, or this was just a super hot crowd, because this crowd was hot from start to finish.
It definitely sounded like it. I mean, a lot of these older shows that I watch, the crowds are always just unbelievably loud. And
like, Vince is like trying to yell over the audience of how loud they are.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously the product was much hotter at the time. Maybe it has to do with the fact that there were a lot of children in the audience as well, but just really great sounding crowds.
What would cause you to just yell uncontrollably at a wrestling show?
Jesus. Really spectacular wrestling.
Have you ever just yelled out or...
My first time I went to a show, yeah, of course. I was screaming. I was like, you know, I was...
Were you a heckler?
Yeah, I was, actually. Yeah, my buddy and I, we would just go out there and just yell, like, yell at all the shitty wrestlers about how shitty they were. And no one could hear us, of course, but, like, you know, like, we were all the way at the back, but it was fun.
Those are the best shows, where you get some great heckler that's entertaining at the same time. It's a fine line between annoyance and entertainment, but there have been some.
Yeah, there have been some. Yeah.
Has there been a better wrestling show to attend live with someone than Mauro Ranallo?
Oh my God. No, that was
both times we've gone to wrestling shows with him, incidents have occurred. Of course, UWA was the first, he had just moved here and we told him about this promotion, UWA out in Mississauga. It's like, I think you'll really enjoy this. They do a really good job. They great talent. They bring in a lot of TNA guys. So we went there. And Mauro was just suddenly 15 years old.
Well, here's the thing. Here's like this professional broadcaster that I'm sure some people back there would recognize. I mean, I certain guys would probably know him even from like Matt Rats and Stampede and whatnot. But like certainly, you know, this guy was the pride announcer. I think a lot of people would recognize him. You'd expect him to remain very professional and just keep quiet, enjoy the show. Complete opposite. This guy fucking like stands up. The audience, there's this guy named Josh Prohibition who was in the main event and he was like the top heel. So the whole crowd is like, fuck you, J Pro. And Mauro just joins in, fuck you, J Pro.
Oh, there was also a story at the time that had made its way out that when Kurt Angle came into TNA, he told Chris Sabin, it's like, you just look kind of dirty. You look like that guy, Pigpen from Charlie Brown. And I don't know how this made its way out, but,
Pigpen.
And so Chris Sabin comes out and Mauro just yells, hey, Pigpen! Pigpen! And I was just dying laughing.
Oh man.
Oh,
and he
so
probably
funny.
Interviewed him at some point.
He definitely came on, Fight Network Radio at one point. In fact, do you want to hear a story where you're just going to think I'm crazy? Like it was right at the time we had launched Fight Network Radio when we went to this UWA show. In fact, it might have been one of the first shows that we did. And when I started that show, it was 2007 with Mauro, and I was the producer of the show, and then I do a news update at the bottom of the hour. And for whatever reason, that day I read the news update and I think I flubbed a word or something during my update, and this just drove me insane. I was just so mad that when we went to this UWA show, I just felt, I was like, fuck, I was terrible at this. I was so bad that I left the show at intermission and got in my car and drove around for 20 minutes where I redid this newscast in my head and did it flawlessly.
Wow.
Because I was so...
Wait a second. So in the middle of the show, you left, got into
your car. At intermission.
I
left to go, I think I went to go grab food somewhere or something. And I got in my car and I just kept doing this newscast over and over again.
You didn't tell any of us? You just like, you just decided, man, I am really like, psychologically damaged because of this flub in this newscast that you decided to, like almost you were about to commit suicide, except you didn't commit suicide. You redid your take.
Well, I would go with the gentler term of perfectionist, but you can label me however you want, Wei. But I was very I was like, man, I want to do on air stuff, and here I can't even say a fucking 1 minute newscast.
Now look at you.
Now look at me. What a train wreck.
Are you doing 3 hour newscast?
Oh, some people would say, oh fuck, Pollock, you should have just taken that signal in 2007 and just spared us. But anyway, there you go.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Case.
I didn't know you were going through such a personal turmoil.
turmoil. I don't know. To be honest, I haven't given that. That just came to mind right now as we were talking about this. But I remember doing that during that first week.
Well, don't be so hard on yourself, man. I mean, you know, clearly one little flub, I don't think anybody would have noticed anyway. But I think it just shows how much of a like perfectionist, as you say, you are.
Look at me now. Now I'm the subject of a 30-page fact-checking thread.
Yeah, now imagine what that does to you. How do you?
Oh, I love that thread. I love that thread.
All right.
Well, this show was live. Let's see if they flubbed anything on this this hour of television. As we mentioned, opened up with Vince and Jesse, and Jesse was wearing this like leopard skin hat of some sort. How would you best describe this? He looked like I don't know what he looked like here.
I don't know. It's a Jesse Ventura look. I wonder where he buys this stuff. You know?
They said he was back from Hollywood.
Yeah.
So he must have just finished a movie.
Like what stores would sell this stuff? Like outside of like a sex store or a Halloween costume.
Maybe that's where he got it.
Okay. He is the body.
Yeah. That's if they don't follow wrestling, and a guy came in calling himself the body, yeah, and he wanted this outfit. They're like, don't ask. Don't judge people.
I think he was the governor.
The governor. So Ventura predicts that Andre the Giant will win the title tonight. And then we go to a Hulk Hogan training video.
This was...
Was this something else, Way? It was, oh, did God. You notice like the riff for the song? It was like Jake Roberts' future theme song.
Yeah.
That they used here. Slow cuts.
Dude.
They did like these crazy flash frames.
Dude, this was, they're like, I'm waiting for almost like a UFC countdown video. Like, you know, like guys, like, you know, going through all their strength and conditioning training, talking about how hard they've been training and everything. This was just close-up shots of Hulk Hogan's oiled-up muscles. There's just a close-up of his, like, sweaty thighs and ass. Like, I thought I was watching his sex tape.
I got that feeling as well watching this. I was like, this is like a, you
this
know,
weird.
The woman's going to walk in any second right now, and he's going to drop the weights and then just make his way over to her and,
like no
on the bench,
no type of dialogue whatsoever. It's just like, well, here's Hogan training, and it just shows him basically going through a workout to some music, and it just these shots were way too close, and with this
1988 at its finest. And then at the end, he just poses in the mirror and is yelling, "Ah!"
Oh my God, yeah, this is strange.
We forgot to mention off the top, Jimmy Corderas is going to be by as well. He was at this event.
Oh. So
he's going to share us his memories and how he had the main event angle spoiled moments before. So that's coming up later on in the show.
Wait, Jimmy was working at this time, right?
Yes.
Right, okay.
So we go into the first matchup. It's the Honky Tonk Man defending the championship against Randy Savage. One thing I miss, Way, was we get like a crowd shot. And they have logos of all the wrestlers.
Oh, I love it. I miss this so much. Everybody has their own logo. Macho Man has his Macho Man logo with the goggles. Honky Tonk Man, of course. You know, Andre has the handprint. I love these so much. They're really well designed. Everybody's looked unique. I mean, they could just put this on a t-shirt and gladly I would wear these shirts. It's something I wish they would bring back.
They had these logos well up until like the mid 90s or so. They would do, cause when they do all those market specific promos, it was always just a green screen with their logo behind it.
Yeah.
And it was such a simple, marketing trick that you're right. It's like, okay, we have this wrestler. What can we sell? Logo of them on a shirt.
Absolutely. I mean, every band needs a logo. Every product needs a logo. And I wish that's something that they would bring back. Sure, they make t-shirts now. Like, you know, John Cena kind of has his, you can't see me t-shirt design, but I like to look for like that one, you know, just a John Cena, you know, just maybe a John Cena with a, what represents him? Shorts, like a pair of shorts and John.
Shorts with John on the left leg and Cena on the right.
Yeah, something like that, you know, not exactly that, but like, you know, like the I think logos are great, and it's something I wish they would bring back.
You could get like an actual rock, and just have the above it.
Yeah, I don't know if that would sell, but
no,
yeah.
Well, that's why we wouldn't be in this business. We can just appreciate other people's work.
Yeah.
So Savage is it. First, we go to the back with Gene Okerlund, who is with Honky Tonk Man and Jimmy Hart. And Honky Tonk Man said, "I am coming to Comedy Bar." No, he didn't.
Yeah.
And he talks about Elizabeth wanting him, and he's going to take her down a lonely street to the Heartbreak Hotel. Very suggestive threat. And then he does a bunch of different Elvis lyrics, and Okerlund ends it saying, "I hope the real Elvis doesn't hear this," which would be impossible because the man died 11 years before this event.
Yes. So, but, you know, it's been suspected.
He's been seen, yes, you're right. Yeah. Maybe there was an imposter or the real thing at the Market Square Arena that night. From there, Honky and Jimmy Hart come out along with his manager at the time, or valet, Peggy Sue, which was Sensational Sherry with a blonde wig and glasses on at the time.
Yes.
And then Okerlund is with Randy Savage and Elizabeth, where Savage says, "We're entering the danger zone." Hard to hear Savage here.
Yeah, because the music was really loud. What I found odd about this whole Liz and Savage dynamic is that, you know, Gene asks Liz the question. He asks Gene if, you know, she's afraid. And then before she could even start to answer, Savage just talks all over her. You know, like, almost like, you know, they're doing a turn here. Like, where, like, "You don't talk, woman. I talk for you." And, that's the sense I kind of got from this whole thing. It was just
It was actually the opposite, though, way, because that was really the dynamic between these two. It was like Elizabeth was like this woman that listened to the orders of Randy. And if you remember, at the end of this match, Savage holds up the rope to let her enter the ring, and the announcers are like, "Wow, what a nice guy." And it was, in fact, the opposite. He was becoming nicer now and doing such nice things as, like, opening a rope for this woman instead of treating her like shit.
Did he always treat her like shit, though? I mean,
he was a heel prior to the in 80, up until like 87, and then the turn began, and now he was a babyface.
So then he should let her talk. How about that?
Well, let's not get too crazy here. This was only 1988.
Oh yeah.
So, match begins for the Intercontinental title. Actually, I believe this is the match where the company wanted to put the title on Savage here, and Honky Tonk Man refused with the infamous line, "If you want my title, it'll be right here on my mantle." And he didn't want to lose here to Savage. And in an indirect way, it ended up leading to Savage winning the title at WrestleMania, which was not the original plan for WrestleMania 4.
So, interesting. What was the original plan?
Ted DiBiase.
Oh.
He was the planned winner that year at the tournament, and Savage would be the Intercontinental Champion. But things did not work out. So in a weird way, Honky Tonk Man, by not putting Savage over, ultimately gave him a bigger push as a result of it.
Hmm.
Roundabout way. Honky Tonk Man was constantly gyrating at Elizabeth, and then Savage went after him on the floor. Savage gets his leg grabbed by Jimmy Hart, so Honky gets the advantage. Just extremely basic stuff here. I mean, Honky Tonk Man, not exactly Dean Malenko out there, but crowd was super into all of this.
Yeah, and I thought Savage was always moving at a very fast pace. His timing was really good.
Yeah. Honky Tonk Man, the master of the missed elbow drops here throughout this match. Then Honky goes after Liz, and Savage attacks from behind for a big pop, tosses him to the floor and hits an axe handle off the top to the floor, and then another inside of the ring. And Savage sends Hart into the ring. Honky Tonk Man runs into Hart with a knee, and then a sleeper hold by Savage as the crowd is just going nuts here, thinking they might see a title change. But then Peggy Sue goes after Elizabeth. Honky comes after him, and Honky gets sent into the post by Savage, and in the fastest count ever, is counted out at 8:25, and Savage wins by countout.
Yeah, I was surprised that the count came so soon because I didn't catch it either. But I'm not disappointed by the finish. I think this is a very fine finish for a TV match.
Honky Tonk Man then got the guitar after the match, and Savage gets hit from behind by Hart's megaphone, and Elizabeth shields Randy Savage from the guitar. But then he gets up, he stops Honky Tonk Man, and takes the guitar and breaks it. To which Jesse Ventura is outraged, saying, "I can't believe he would do that to an instrument like that."
Hmm. Yeah, $1,000 guitar.
It's Vandalism by Randy Savage. So crowd was super into this match. You know, you got around the finish here by keeping the title on Honky Tonk Man while not beating Savage. And yeah, well put together, basic match.
Yeah, yeah, I thought it was all right. I thought the crowd certainly was just pretty amazing here. And Savage, hey, it was really nice just to be able to watch these guys in their prime. That's what I really like about watching these old shows.
And then Savage allows Elizabeth into the ring and hoists her up, and Vince and Ventura are just amazed.
Yeah, Vince says, wow, what a nice guy. Vince says, now there's the real trophy. She's the literal definition of a trophy wife.
Wow, unbelievable.
I just found her to be the most stereotypical damsel in distress that there's ever been. And I know this is the 80s, but she just stands outside, she doesn't talk. She's completely, completely defenseless. It's like she's just a major liability for Savage here.
Yeah, that was always, I mean, that was maybe the charm for a lot of people of Elizabeth. Just this quiet woman in the corner. But then, the other side of you is like, well, what does this woman add to Randy Savage? Is she like a hard negotiator in the back for title matches? Does she have some infinite wisdom of the mat game that we are not, privy to? What is it that Elizabeth does other than stand in the corner of her husband that a ringside seat might provide better?
Yeah, it'd be safer.
It's fair for.
Yeah,
much
it'd be safer. Yeah.
Almost got killed here by a guitar. Has Honky Tonk Man wanted to take her down an alleyway to the Heartbreak Hotel.
Yeah. Kind of irresponsible.
A little bit. A little reckless. Then McMahon and Ventura preview the greatest rematch of all time. Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant. And they are highlights from WrestleMania 3, with the key spot being Hogan going for a slam. And Andre falls on top of him for a two count. That Jesse protested was a three count. And for almost a year now, we have built up to this rematch that is going to be happening next.
Yeah, I think this was great. Do you think, was this spot planned during the match itself that they would, basically do a near fall and then basically build on that for next year?
I'm sure it was, a good near fall spot to do early on. And, I don't know if they necessarily had their next year mapped out, but they at least, it's something that, we do a near fall here. There's always that, ability to go back to this with, some sort of controversy.
Yeah. I just think it was great. Just picking out this controversial point from this match to build a rematch, just whatever, to illegitimize the win that little bit. And I think it works really well.
They aired highlights from the angle on Superstars where Andre attacked Hogan from behind and choked him, and then the contract signing at the Royal Rumble back in January in Hamilton, which is another show we have reviewed in the past, featuring Hulk Hogan in jeans and these white boots fine fashion in 1988.
Mm-hmm.
Hulk Hogan. And Okerlund's in the back with Ted DiBiase, Virgil, and Andre the Giant, and they do this like close-up of Andre's hands. And Ted says, Hogan, your account is overdrawn, and Andre is going to close it. And then Andre adds, I squeeze, and I never stop. Oh, oh. And that's Andre. I always loved Andre promos, where it was barely audible what he was saying, but I knew he was angry.
Yeah, and I thought DiBiase was fantastic, too.
Ted DiBiase was, this to me was the prime years of Ted DiBiase. I mean, someone that, always a real great worker, if you've seen his stuff, even prior to the WWF in Mid-South, in St. Louis, but the character aspect was, that is what came to life in the WWF. He had a great character and was one of the few guys I think that could have played it so well. I mean, he was just excellent in this role and such a great talker. Just to me, the complete package in 1988. And then we got the entrance of Andre, and Okerlund is with Hogan saying that he has gone back and watched their WrestleMania 3 match 1,001 times and is confident it was only a two count. What the definition of torture way would be watching that match 10 times, much less 1,001. I mean, hey, historic match, but god awful match.
Yeah. Well, I think that is the epitome of a match that doesn't need to be technically great in order to be memorable.
No, and this next match was absolutely, I think, Wei, that people should go back and you just need to watch maybe this match 1,001 times to realize that, you know what, a great technically worked match, sure, it's great to watch, but it really means so little in the big picture when you have characters that are over, and that to me can overshadow anything.
Yeah.
Because this match was horrendously bad and yet fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Because this setup, I just thought this was so well put together. And Hogan went after Andre before the bell even rung. And McMahon repeatedly noted the referee, Dave Hebner, in the ring. And Ventura saying, I'm glad that Dave Hebner is the referee instead of Joey Morella for screwing up WrestleMania 3. And they did this great tilt up on Andre, starting at his foot, going right up to his head, just accentuating what a gigantic man this Andre character is.
Did you notice that when Hogan was in the back cutting his promo, he was wearing the old WWF title, and then when he came out, he was wearing the Winged Eagle?
Oh, I didn't. You're right. He was wearing the old title in the back, and I didn't notice that he had the different belt.
Yeah. Just
very interesting.
Yeah, I'm guessing they taped those in advance, and in between, they changed the title.
Stellar observation by Wei Ting. The first minute of this match was just each standing in their corner until Hogan attacked all three, and with DiBiase and Virgil taking boots to the floor, and then he attacked Andre. Hogan repeatedly tries to get Andre off his feet, punches, eye rake. He climbs to the top, but Andre slams him off, a la Ric Flair. And then Andre falls over, and Vince covers saying, oh, a headbutt attempt. It looked like Andre just tripped and fell.
But it looked really bad.
This could have been his headbutt attempt. And then he goes to choke Hogan. Andre steps on his hand, scoop slam, kicks, chops. A big boot by Andre, which was the high spot of the match, but unfortunately Andre losing his balance when he went to give this big boot, and Hogan goes to the floor. Virgil sends him back into the ring, and Ventura brings up the fact that, as we saw with the Honky Tonk Man and Randy Savage, you can't win the title on a countout. Great recall from Jesse Ventura.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing watching this just a few weeks after we had watched Super Brawl, and the effectiveness of Jesse Ventura in one and not so much in the other.
Yeah, absolutely.
Andre is choking Hogan as he rises to his feet, hits him with chops, does a clothesline off the second turnbuckle, and then Virgil grabs his leg, but then hits his leg drop. But Hebner is meanwhile speaking to Virgil, and Andre comes from behind and hits Hogan with the headbutts from behind as he grabs his hair, and then his finish at the time, the hip toss. And Hebner turns around and counts three, despite Hogan kicking out at two at 9 minutes and 6 seconds. And everyone is confused. They are stunned. What has just happened? And McMahon is livid, calling it a stupid mistake by Hebner. As Hebner presents the title to Andre, this crowd was just booing vociferously here, Wei. Quite the scene here at the finish before the angle was revealed.
Yeah, I really wish I was a fan at this time and that I would be able to watch this and the proceeding of the following angle live, because I just imagine title changes are pretty rare at this time, and to be able to see one in this fashion would have probably been pretty crazy.
So they come back from break, and Okerlund interviews Andre, and he says he is giving the title to Ted DiBiase. Hogan is pissed, and then Dave Hebner is in the ring. Dave Hebner comes into the ring confronting the other referee, who is actually Earl Hebner, and this was just so great. You had Hogan's back to these two twins. Most fans are probably just, what the fuck is going on here? And Hogan just slowly turns around and sees these two twins. This was so awesome.
I try to imagine what the equivalent would be, you know, like for somebody like me who never watched this, but you know, like the equivalent today, perhaps, like maybe it would be like, you know, St. Pierre versus Diaz, okay? And then all of a sudden Diaz wins, and then there's like two Herb Deans inside the octagon all of a sudden.
This, to me, it was very similar in a sense to that angle we always talk about with ECW and WCW, where you turn, where they turned and aligned together. This, it was almost like Hogan's back was towards them, And it was like just this slow turn that, you know, it's just like, man, I just want to see Hogan's reaction when he turns here. And he did it just so slowly that you're just at the edge of your seat of him turning here. And this is one of the best angles I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was really good.
I just thought it was so great. And even today, I thought this was great. Imagine in 88 where maybe Earl Hebner had been refereeing in the NWA. And I mean, people, maybe a small minority might be aware that Dave and Earl were twin brothers, but I think you're talking about just such an insignificant amount of the audience that for many, it's like, there are two Hebner brothers?
Yeah. Maybe this is what they should be doing with twins, period. I mean, they should, like, maybe they should have only debuted one Bella twin, and then all of a sudden did this.
Well, I think they did do that. I think they introduced Brie, and then eventually Nikki showed up. Didn't quite have the lasting effect this did, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, this was cool. Well, did they ever explain why Dave, wasn't around? Why Hebner or why Earl took Dave's spot?
I imagine it was explained on TV afterwards, but I don't know what the exact, reasoning was here. Another key here was that I thought the announcers were so great because this could have been really confusing as to what happened here, but they were like Hogan's making the money sign to indicate that this referee was paid off by Ted DiBiase. And then they did the promo after with Hogan. First of all, Hogan, grabs Earl and military presses him to the floor onto Ted DiBiase and Virgil and overshoots DiBiase and Virgil. So Earl just plummets to the aisle, and Jimmy Corderas will share with us what happened to Earl after this bump. But this was just a great, great angle to set up WrestleMania 4, which I guess they would explain all the loose ends on the next TV that would set up the tournament and, yeah, the Dave Hebner absence.
Yeah, this was awesome. Must have been crazy to watch live.
And 33 million people watching this.
Wow.
Insane. The most watched wrestling match in the history of U.S. wrestling.
Wow.
Then we still had another match, but it really was of no significance. Strikeforce defending the tag titles against the Hart Foundation. But first, we went to the back with Vince having his flub of the night.
Mean Gene Okerlund is standing by with Mean Gene.
Mean Gene Okerlund is standing by with Mean Gene.
Oh, man.
We went to Okerlund with Hogan, and Hogan was just like so over-the-top angry here, saying that there should be a thorough investigation. He's just yelling.
How much money did they spend on the...
He was just so angry here about DiBiase paying for plastic surgery. It was like, it was a great promo, but Hogan was just so cartoonish here in his anger. Hogan, act angry.
Yeah, this was amazing. Hogan was great.
I loved how, and then a year later, Vince thought, you know what, this guy could carry a movie. No holds barred. And we came back from the break, and the match is going on here with Strikeforce and Hart Foundation. And all of a sudden, Vince and Ventura are like, well, we're out of time. We got to go. This match is in progress, but bye. And that was it.
That was the show. Yep. Who cares? Who cares about the...
Well, I don't even know why they started this. Why couldn't we have just ended with Hogan in the back with this promo and then, you know, go back to an on-camera with Vince and Jesse and send us off?
I'm guessing they just felt like it was too early to end the show for the live crowd.
No, I'll continue the show for the live crowd, but for the television audience, it's like, oh, why are you dangling this in front
right.
of me? And not even, like, I get a minute of this match? This is just silly.
Yeah, yeah.
So there you go. Very famous angle in WWF history. I loved it. I give this show like a 8.5 out of 10, all on that angle.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I give this an 8 out of 10, just because it was easily digestible. By the end of it, I was well versed in both main storylines heading into the pay-per-view. This was fun. Did its job. Did its job really well.
Are you excited about WrestleMania 4 now?
Well, I wish I had. I wish they kind of got more into like the whole tournament deal. I mean, there's a whole month of TV in between this to really get me excited. But I think, you know, am I going to tune in the next week if I had seen this? Absolutely, I would.
Yes, perfect example of shooting a big angle that really makes you want more and gives you that sense of anticipation for the follow-up to this the next week on television.
Mm-hmm. So what did happen in between this and WrestleMania? What did they announce?
Well, they had Jack Tunney announce that you cannot give the title to somebody, and therefore it is vacant, and it will be put up in a tournament.
Wait, hold on a second. That's the only reason? Well, wouldn't the title revert back to Andre?
No, because Andre surrendered the title.
That's ridiculous. Oh, yeah. Well, why wouldn't Andre say, okay, I don't surrender, give it back to me?
Well, maybe they viewed it as unethical what he did, and this is his punishment. And let's not forget, it's not like he won the title clean here. He won it due to nefarious means here by hiring a non-sanctioned referee who didn't even count properly. I mean, this title was certainly disputed.
Right. Okay. Well, that's a legit reason.
I think it was well laid out. And that would lead to the tournament at WrestleMania 4. And now we'll head on over to the message board and see what you guys had to say about this. And we start off with Chris in Ottawa. It's a good thing I wasn't allowed to stay up for the main event shows when I was a kid because I'd seen Hulk Hogan's workout montage. I never would have watched wrestling again. That was scary stuff. How great are some of the performers on this show? Even a little thing like Honky Tonk Man's 180-degree mood swing when Macho Man's music hit is a perfect example. He makes me believe that he's a complete narcissist most of the time, but in the face of even a hint of adversity, he's an incredible coward. It's been said countless times, but it always bears repeating until it's corrected. Today's performers can learn so much so easily from their predecessors' work. That said, it's hard to imagine anyone could ever duplicate the chemistry of Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth. Their post-match deal was the most touching moment this side of WrestleMania 7. I really love the insanity of the Hogan-Andre finish. The idea of an evil Dave Hebner doppelganger is hilarious. And poor Earl Hebner cleared DiBiase and Virgil and was closer to hitting Andre, except Andre couldn't care less and watched Hebner bounce off the cement floor and Hogan's tearful agony. All great stuff. I have to give the original main event 10 delicious glasses of pulpy orange juice out of 10.
G. Hall, I remember watching this live as a little G, and that opening segment with Hogan lifting weights and shit was a wee bit contrived, even as an 11-year-old. I suppose we shall smite each other on the law pro boards over that, because it's really important. Minus 2 points. No one ever explains their marking rubric here. Minus 1 point for that. Nonetheless, I did sincerely enjoy the Ventura-McMahon tandem for selfish reasons. Ventura's weird hat is worth a point. I am sent an extra point from Jason Agnew for the Jimmy Hart segment with his boy, the Honky Tonk Man, being interviewed by Mean Gene. Plus one, 9 out of 10 thus far. Oh crap, Piggy Sue joining Honky Tonk Man. That's a song by Buddy Holly, not Elvis Presley. Elvis, of course, being the musician Honky Tonk Man is a likeness of. That's instantly negative 3 points. So far, we're at 6 out of 10. Macho Man always adds at least 2 points by default to a score, so we're at 8 out of 10. Okay, this is like a Scott Steiner promo. I mean, where does he stay here? I'm glad you guys chose to review this. All sarcasm aside, thank you, gentlemen. I give this show a G out of G.
All right, Kid Canada, this show brings back great memories for me because the main event angle is literally the first wrestling angle I can ever remember from my childhood. I was 7 years old at the time and used to go to house shows at Maple Leaf Gardens with my cousin and uncle. But this is the first time I remember being emotionally invested in an actual angle. I still recall being absolutely beside myself that Hulk Hogan could just get screwed over by a crooked referee and complaining to my parents about it. I probably had never heard of the concept of identical twins, so Hulk's suggestion that Ted DiBiase had paid someone to have extensive plastic surgery to look like Dave Hebner was the only thing that made sense to me. Looking back on it now, it was still a brilliant angle. The WWF only had one shot to get the surprise factor of using Earl and Dave Hebner this way, and they got it right. The match itself wasn't great, but it was all about the angle anyway. The follow-up may not have been ideal, but that's for next week's review. As for the rest of the show, I love Jesse's commentary, love DiBiase's promo calling Hulk Hogan fans Hulk a morons, love the subtle things like Virgil standing there fanning out a giant wad of dollar bills, and even like the Hogan workout montage because it was set to my favorite entrance song of all time, Jake Roberts' music.
Chris Womack, this show aired just after I started watching wrestling. The MPV for me was Hogan. That scene of Hogan in the gym with the spooky lighting while he laughs maniacally is priceless. I was 6 at the time and was totally enthralled in seeing this rematch. I remember the referee angle very clearly and was just completely disgusted when Andre sold the title to dead Ted DiBiase. The Hogan's promo at the end of the show was one of his finest in my opinion. He legitimately looks devastated by what had happened and he got the angle over huge. Why did they cut off the show with the beginning of the Hart Foundation match? Timing.
All right. DG Mitchell, he asks, or writes here, how many teeth did Andre have? 64? What the hell? How did Hogan have the old WWF belt in his interview, then 30 seconds later have the winged eagle belt walk into the ring? Wasn't this supposed to be live, or did they address this? Or expect the idiots watching not to know the difference? Why was this billed as a rematch, given that it was nearly a year since WrestleMania? Well, because it's a rematch. Maybe it was the naivete of the 80s, but did WWF really expect people to believe someone was paid to get plastic surgery to look like someone else? Hilarious. Any idea of how the Hart Foundation match went? Strange, I would have thought they would have timed the matches better to have Hogan on last and the Hart Foundation before it. Good short show, 6.5 out of 10.
I don't know if that Hart Foundation match was even ever meant to be on TV. You know what I mean? Like, it just seemed like one of those, or maybe it was like a swing bout.
A swing bout.
Yeah. Even though in wrestling, you shouldn't really have to have one. I don't know. Keith from Dublin, Ireland. Well, what a great show. I remember my 12-year-old self watching this live on Sky TV back when wrestling was on free TV, and it being one of the happiest moments in my wrestling life. I was a huge Savage fan, and as a consequence, a Hogan hater. So imagine my delight when the Hulkster got fucked over during his match. I smelled the change was in the air. Maybe it was going to be Macho's time to shine. Maybe my dog had just farted. Who knew? Either way, I knew that the next time I went to school, all of the Hulkamaniacs were going to get some verbal abuse in the tone of Macho Man from me. From the opening promos to the closing credits, this show delivered in spades. I can only imagine the decibel level of the crowd at the show because it sounded pretty crazy through the laptop. I don't think I've ever heard a crowd so hot. What the hell was Jesse Ventura wearing? It looked like he had an unrolled condom on his head, and it seemed that, compared to today at least, Vince's balls had yet to drop. He sounded like a choir boy. The Hogan training montage was amazing. They don't make them like that anymore, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. The Honky Tonk Man gave me one of my favorite promos of all time. It just shows how unused he was at old school Raw. It was a decent intercontinental title match, back when the IC title meant something. Technically, you were the third best wrestler in the company after the WWF champion and the number one contender. The Hogan-Andre match was a standard affair between the two, obviously not a patch of their WrestleMania 3 match, but better than their WrestleMania 4 one.
Trent from Texas. The most glaring thing on this show will probably get looked over by most, but it's vital that I point out possibly one of the man's greatest physical achievements. During Hogan's workout routine montage, it is important to point out that he was doing reps of 665 pounds on the bench press with ease. He had 7 45-pound plates on both sides. The world bench press record is 715, and Hogan was easily doing reps that was only 50 pounds lighter than this. He could have easily maxed out at least 800 pounds by the way he was doing those reps and shattered all bench press records for eternity, as well as pushed the limits of what a human being could physically do. Why do they never play up him being quite possibly the strongest man in the history of the world? Better yet, why is Hogan so humble about this feat and has never brought this up despite him constantly lying or greatly exaggerating about all of his other achievements? Well, yeah. I don't want to break this to Trent, that just about every weightlifting montage you have probably seen in wrestling features gimmick plates, gimmick bars, and I don't want to accuse the WWF of anything, but I would venture to guess very highly that these plates were likely gimmicked. And this was common practice in pro wrestling.
Well, how much do you think they actually weighed?
I don't know.
If not 665.
I don't know. Not 665 would be my only estimate.
65?
Maybe.
Hmm.
Why not?
Okay.
Well, you want to have a bit of a struggle to them. I mean, Hogan was a strong guy, but right. You know, you still want that kind of exertion to come through with his great acting.
All right, my turn.
Yeah,
Dave Doofenberg. This brings back some terrible memories from my childhood. I think I was only 4 when this was on, but my parents always recorded these for me as a kid. Hulk Hogan was supposed to be immortal. I'm pretty sure I cried when he lost. That stupid referee didn't see Hogan lift his shoulder up. To make things worse, when my brother and I wrestled, if I lifted my shoulder up, he would ignore it because the referee ignored Hogan's shoulder up as well. Terrible time in my younger years. But seriously, though, this was an amazing angle. DiBiase was the perfect heel back then, and it is just baffling he was never given a run with the title. It was sad seeing Andre so immobile, but he was still as feared as ever. I can't wait for next week's show for another trip down memory lane.
Danny Kaye, it's pretty damn impressive to think that this aired on a major TV network, NBC, in Friday night on prime time. At the time, Friday was still a very strong night for network television. ABC had TGIF, CBS had Dallas, and NBC had Miami Vice. Could you imagine the WWE trying to put on a live show on one of the big four networks during prime time? It would probably crash and burn in the ratings. I don't remember too much of this show, rather... other than the Hogan-Andre rematch. The match itself was pretty bad, but the angle was pretty good in my opinion. And did Andre the Giant seriously call the belt the World Tag Team Championship? Because it sounded like that to me.
Rich from Idaho. Awesome, awesome, awesome choice this week. I was 7 when this originally aired and did not have cable. Thus, the only wrestling I would get to watch was when my loving, wonderful mom would stay up and remember to record Saturday night's main event, which I was indeed grateful for. But it did limit my viewing, so you can imagine my excitement when I got to see it in prime time. The build-up to both these matches was incredible, and the current WWE could learn a lot, such as how to properly use titles to make matches into big-time deals. At the time, I had never seen the Million Dollar Man before and wondered, who the hell is this guy and where is Bobby the Brain? I wonder how many other viewers felt the same way, if any. I do remember at the time being upset about not seeing the tag match because my viewing was few and far between and I wanted every minute of wrestling I could get. Of course, at the time I was also upset that Andre finally won and then gave a belt to a guy that I had not heard of. But looking back, it makes sense and it is better than the finger poke of doom. I give this show a 9.5 out of 10. Keep up the great work and I might recommend investing in a keychain bottle opener. They come in quite handy.
I should get one of those. All right. We promised it earlier. We're now going to hear from Jimmy Corderas. Of course, you can see his work on The Score with Art O'Cal as well as on Fight Network, where we do previews and reviews of every single WWE and TNA pay-per-view. He was there that night at Market Square Arena, and let's hear from Jimmy. All right, we've just finished up reviewing the main event from February of 1988, featuring what I would generally think is one of the most famous angles in WWF history, the twin reveal with the debut of Earl Hebner. And one of the men who was there that night in Indianapolis, Indiana, obviously a very, very good friend here of the Law family and Fight Network, is Jimmy Corderas, who I do want to mention. His new book is out April the 1st, The Three Count, My Life in Stripes as a WWE Referee, where he even discusses this huge angle. Jimmy, how are you?
I'm doing good, John. Are you recovered yet from Montreal?
I am still in the post-Montreal hangover. I enjoyed all of 3 hours of sleep on Sunday as I just went straight driving and then the law on Sunday night. But recovering.
You'll get there.
I have a really hard time complaining about traveling from one city to the next to a guy that spent the majority of 25 years doing that. So I feel I'm not really at the level to complain about traveling at this point.
That's okay. You can complain to me anytime, yeah. No problem.
Well, this show, Jimmy, February of 1988, still the record for the most viewed wrestling event in U.S. history. 33 million people watching this this rematch with Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant. And Jimmy, from going back to 1988, how well do you remember kind of just the lead up to this this big rematch from Hogan and Andre coming out of WrestleMania 3 the year prior, and this on NBC?
There was a lot of high expectations, obviously. I mean, you know, wrestling hadn't been on a regular network television program, you know, in prime time in I don't know how many years. So the expectations were high, but I don't think they anticipated the audience that they got. I mean, 33 million, I think, was the number that tuned in that night, which is phenomenal. And really, really, you know, set the tone for how the WWE was going to progress going forward, you know.
So what was kind of, just the vibe of, in the back watching this angle unfold? Like today we'll always hear stories of, you know, when they're bringing a guy back, kind of they'll keep him either at the hotel and bring him at the last minute, hide him in a limo or somewhere and just keep him away from everyone. Was that kind of how this was treated with Earl? And was there even any knowledge that that he was coming in at this point?
Well, not to very many people. I'm assuming pretty much they kept it very close to the vest as far as the people involved in the match, and maybe a Pat Patterson and a Bruce Pritchard or somebody like that. Obviously, Vince McMahon knew, as far as everybody else, it was kind of funny that day because we were kind of like, has anybody seen David Denny or Dave Hebner? And then somebody, I think somebody mentioned that, yeah, he wasn't feeling well, so he's just lying down, and he'll be here later and stuff like that. And as the show began, nobody kind of clued in. You know what I mean? Like, it was
right.
kind of like, okay, business as usual, here we go, we're doing our thing. And then, like I describe in the book, everybody's standing room only at the monitor. Everybody's watching this thing. And the first thing that pops into my mind, I'm watching the monitor, and I see, I guess who I thought was Dave Hebner in the ring, and I'm going, man, he's lost a little bit of weight. He's looking pretty good, you know. And I happened to be near the catering table, and I turned around to get myself something to drink. And when I did, hiding in the shadows was Dave Hebner.
Ah, so Jimmy Corderas did your brain just start spinning at this point? Like, wait a minute.
It was kind of weird. I'm looking and I kind of half smiled, and I looked at the monitor. I looked back at David, and you know, he put his finger to his lips. You know, shh. Yeah, he nothing. I went, all right, no problem. And now I was probably grinning ear to ear, going like, okay, let's see what happens now.
This, to me, it was just pulled off so well. I mean, the way it played in that here, Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man, has gone to these lengths to have plastic surgery done to get this twin brother. And I mean, this is one of those instances where, you know, had this happened today, I'm sure, you know, there would have been knowledge that, you know, Dave Hebner is a twin. At this point, I'm sure pretty much everyone watching this at the time, you know, you might have seen Earl for a bit in the NWA, but the vast majority here probably had no idea here. And that reveal when Hogan has his back to both referees, turns around, I mean, it was just such an excellent visual. I think the announcers just got the story across so clearly. This was just, I just thought, so well done.
Yeah, I agree totally. I thought it was brilliant the way it was done, and to be honest with you, nobody saw it coming. I mean, you mentioned the fact that Earl, obviously, both Earl and Dave, you know, originated. They started in the NWA, I think, the Mid Atlantic Territory, working for Crockett, and Earl was still there. And we knew Earl was still refereeing down there, but nobody put two and two together until we saw them both standing in the ring, and it was just brilliant.
And now the follow up after this, Jimmy, did Earl just was he just absorbed onto the officiating crew after this, and then he just assumed his role that we all familiarized him with for so long at this point?
Well, not right away as Earl Hebner, at least. Anyways, he did he suffered a shoulder injury when he got tossed out of the ring.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he landed on his shoulder and needed some shoulder surgery, and when he recovered from that, he came back. You know, right away he joined everybody on the road. But it was funny because it would be like they would have Earl on one show and David on the other, but they would both be David Hebner refereeing at separate events, you know, just for a little while. And then eventually when David retired from the ring and became a road agent, they pretty much traveled together. And again, for a little while, it was, you know, kind of left ambiguous that it was – they didn't really mention him by name, Earl Hebner, until a little while later. Then they finally just said, without really an explanation, just said, "Your referee, Earl Hebner."
And what a welcome to the company he got with that military press by Hogan, because you could see, like, you have Ted and Virgil on the floor and just completely overshot them. And yeah, I had no idea he needed surgery after that, but completely understandable with that launch. I definitely noted that watching that Hogan just tossed this guy.
Yeah, he was saying his prayers and eating his vitamins that night, I guess. I don't know. He just launched him. It was like... And you could see the look, especially on Virgil and Ted DiBiase's face. They were looking like, oh, my goodness, we're not going to catch him.
From what you can recall, any memories at that point? Because I know you spent a lot of time with Andre during a great period of this time, driving him around and such. At this point in his career, I mean, how was Andre? Because you hear, you know, as he got later in life, I mean, he was dealing with a lot of health issues at the time. How was Andre at this point in 1988?
He was, you could see, he was in the declining years, unfortunately. You know, his back was giving him a lot of trouble. He could still go. I mean, the guy, you gotta give him credit, because for a guy his size and you know, his mobility was starting to wane a little bit, too. He wasn't as mobile as he was, obviously. But he never lost his spirit. He was always Andre, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd go out and have a pop with him afterwards, and of course he would, not let you buy, especially if he liked you. Thank God I was on his good side. but, yeah, his attitude never changed that I saw, but obviously, you know, physically, he was starting to struggle a little bit.
Yeah, it was something incredible just to watch, just the live crowd for this. I mean, just such a hot audience. And I don't know if you recall or not, but there was a third match on this show with the Hart Foundation challenging Strikeforce. And unfortunately, they had to go off the air mid-match as Vince and Jesse signed off. Do you recall that match and how it ended, Jimmy?
There was another match afterwards?
Exactly. That's probably how many remember it. It literally starts with about 2 minutes left in the show, and just they're just starting off the match, and suddenly Vince and Jesse are, you know, we're all out of time. Thanks for tuning in as this match is in progress, and that's how it ends.
I'm sure it's somewhere in the archives of Coliseum Video.
There you go. Maybe it'll be in part two of Brett's Dungeon Classics, the finish that it was never seen by anyone, Hart Foundation and Strikeforce.
There you go.
Well, Jimmy, thanks so much for popping on here just for a few minutes. Wanted to just get some of your recollections from that. Of course, I mentioned the book, The Three Count. It is out April 1st, wherever books are sold, as well as Amazon.com, Amazon.ca. And if you're in Toronto, you're going to be having a book launch coming up March the 28th. And for listeners that are in Toronto or surrounding areas, and want to come down, what can you tell us about the book launch coming up?
Yeah, book launch, like you said, March 28th, 7 p.m. at Shoeless Joe's, which the exact address, I believe, is 276 King Street West. It's at King and Duncan, and the book will be available there for purchase for if anybody wants to get it before it's actually released on April 1st. And come find me. I'll sign it for you if that's what you like.
And if you want, myself and Wei Ting, we are certainly going to be there. And if you're a listener there and you want to get your photo taken with podcast enemies, Jimmy Corderas, Art O'Cal, Wei Ting, and John Pollock, I'm sure all of us four would be more than happy to take some rare photos of us together. We will all pose in a photo if you buy that book.
Yeah, exactly. And not only that, it'll be like Marvel and DC Universe uniting.
Ooh, it's that'll require me and Arda to be back on speaking terms. Him and I, let me say, some deep the Joker and Batman of wrestling podcasts out there.
Oh,
folks.
Wow. I didn't know it ran that deep.
Oh, it's deep. It's so deep. Anyway, thanks so much, Jimmy. Go check out this book. The Three Count is available April the 1st. And always appreciate the time, Jimmy. And you can catch Jimmy on Fight Network as we preview and review every single WWE and TNA pay-per-view with the big one, WrestleMania 29, coming up next.
Thanks,
cool.
John. Appreciate it.
So there you go. And once again, we will be at Jimmy Corderas' book launch coming up on Thursday, March the 28th at Shoeless Joe's in downtown Toronto. His book, The Three Count, My Life in Stripes as a WWE Referee, on sale April the 1st. And there you go, Wei. Jimmy saying Aftermath and the Law. It's like the Marvel-DC rivalry. And I made the comparison there that me and Arda would be like the Batman and Joker, which would not be an appropriate comparison. It'd be more like Batman, Spider-Man, I guess, would be a better combination. Who do you think would be which?
Oh, Batman or Spider-Man? I don't know. It's hard to say. I think Arda, Is Arda rich? Does he have a lot of money?
Well, we both work in television, so I think we know the answer.
Yeah, neither of you are probably rich. do you know how to use are you a photographer or do you know science? I don't know. It's hard to say. You could be Spider-Man. You read Spider-Man. There you go.
Are you trying to tell me I'm dead inside?
Yeah. Yes. And you, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, there you go. Thank you once again to Jimmy Corderas for popping on with us and sharing some insight into that very well-remembered angle from 1988. We are going to get on out of here. Next week, of course, we are going to review WrestleMania 4, which this event pretty well set up with the one-night tournament to crown the new WWF champion, which, of course, the title was vacant going into that show, the first WrestleMania at Atlantic City, New Jersey. And that is where
this year's WrestleMania is just going to be just outside of in Newark this year. So look at that, full circle, with Donald Trump involved in both in a roundabout way. So as we get on out of here, of course, you can catch all of our shows at liveaudiowrestling.com. You can follow us on Twitter, at Law Radio, at Way0937. And Way, going out here, why don't you pick a song that if people were going to envision a waiting training montage, what would be a song that would best go with you lifting heavy weights?
Wow. Well, that's a tough choice. Me lifting heavy weights. The Sound of Silence.
By Simon and Garfunkel?
No, just Silence.
Oh, Silence. Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm going to pick something then. Here is the song that I want everyone to picture waiting, lifting heavy weights, nearly being the strongest man in Canada with his weight lifting to this song. I think this would go perfectly. We'll chat with you next week.
If you're getting down, baby, I want it now, baby. Come and get it on, baby. I want it now, baby.
To refresh your mind, because the boys are back in town with a different kind of funk. Who got the funk? We got the funk, right? Everybody wanna boogie down tonight. Now throw your hands up in the sky, move around from side to side. I got what it takes, the beats, the breaks, the funky bass. I give your body crazy shakes, come on.
I heard somebody say, she's at the party, so I'm gonna get me some.
Yeah.